Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Our challenge right now isn't people and money. The problem with the slowdown is the volume of snow.
Schools are closed again and city buses are out of service after Anchorage was buried in another snowstorm. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 12th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, fire marshals investigate a massive explosion in Wasilla over the weekend.
The building that the explosion originated from was destroyed completely.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
A second storm in less than a week has dumped more than a foot of snow on Anchorage, leaving schools across South Central Alaska closed today. And the forecast calls for 2 more snowstorms this week. The latest storm hit Anchorage Sunday afternoon and continued into this morning. Carson Jones with the National Weather Service says cold air from the Bering Sea mixed with a plume of tropical moisture drawn from Hawaii to create heavy snowfall across the Anchorage Bowl overnight.
Pretty uniformly, kind of in the bowl, we're looking at anywhere from 15 to 18 inches. And then kind of as you move up into the hillside, anywhere from 18 to 2 feet of snow in the Anchorage area here.
About half of that snow fell just on Sunday. The 9 inches broke Anchorage's record for the most snow to fall on December 11th. It also helped Anchorage break the city's annual record for liquid precipitation, with more than 28 inches reported this year. Jones says it's also notable that Anchorage got 2 major snowstorms almost back to back.
I think this might be one of the first weeks in a 7-day period where Anchorage has had 2-foot-plus snowstorms, so it definitely was pretty significant for it to happen twice in a row like that.
The storm also hit the Kenai Peninsula and the Mat-Su hard. Schools were closed today in both areas as well as Anchorage. The Weather Service reported up to 2 feet of snow in Nikiski and Soldotna. In much of the Mat-Su, snow totaled up to 15 inches. Chicoloon reported the region's largest snowfall, 2.5 feet. Jones says the forecast calls for yet another storm to dump 2 to 4 inches of snow in Anchorage tomorrow morning. Plus, a storm system is expected to reach the region Wednesday or Thursday. And with that snow on the horizon, Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson says additional workers and equipment are supplementing the city's normal snow removal crews.
Some have suggested that we declare an emergency. There's nothing we can do beyond what we're doing, so the emergency would be simply meaningless.
Bronson and other Muni officials spoke about snow clearing during a press briefing this afternoon. Dozens of cars have gotten stuck on snowy roads, and some residents have complained of slow snow removal. Muni officials said today that new agreements with private contractors and unions representing drivers with the city's parks and recreation staff and Anchorage School District will bring in more people and equipment to help clear roads. The city's regular snow removal fleet as of today consisted of 28 operational road graders, with about 2 drivers for each one running continuously in alternating 12-hour shifts. Bronson says they've been maintaining that pace since the snow began falling last Tuesday. He says the problem right now is the amount of snow.
Our challenge right now isn't people and money. The problem with the slowdown is the volume of snow. Had we had these 2 snowfalls, 10 days or 2 weeks apart, this would be a far more normal operation.
Bronson says he expects busier roads to be cleared overnight, with snow removal resuming on residential streets Tuesday morning. Lance Wilbur, Anchorage's Director of Economic and Community Development, says the Muni's long-standing snow removal policy prioritizes the biggest streets first and residential streets last. After the city's busiest streets are cleared, a countdown clock begins for neighborhoods.
Our target is to do all of the neighborhoods inside the Anchorage Bowl in 84 hours.
Wilbur acknowledges that the Muni did not meet that standard after last week's sudden snowfall. Some neighborhoods were hit by Sunday night's snowstorm without service for the first one. But Wilbur says the neighborhoods that were last in line after the first snowstorm are now first in line. Meanwhile, today was the fourth school day in a row that snow kept Anchorage students out of schools. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the Anchorage School District is considering several options to make up for lost class time, including bringing back remote learning.
A major concern for parents in the city is how the district plans to make up lost class time this year. School district spokesman MJ Tim says the district is worried that additional snow in the forecast this week would keep schools closed.
We are continuing to research all the options, including remote learning, for how we're going to address future weather closures given the forecast for the remainder of the week.
Monday is the fifth snow day this school year. Tim says the district builds 2 days into the school calendar for weather closures. He says a common question from Anchorage parents is why students can't conduct their classes remotely. The Matsuboro School District held remote learning days this Wednesday, Thursday, and again on Monday. Tim says the district has moved away from remote learning after the end of the COVID-19 pandemic.
After last year, we really reset to go back to pre-COVID classroom operations, which was in person and in the classroom, which was the focus. And that's really what we prefer.
Tim says it's difficult for teachers to access their materials in their classrooms to even be able to prepare for remote teaching.
Because we've been out for 4 days in a row, we haven't been able to get back into our buildings to address some of those physical logistics, such as equipment and material that would need to be produced to return to remote learning.
Marnie Hartill is an English teacher with the school district's virtual learning program. She says the switch to remote learning isn't as easy as having students log on with their teacher.
It takes hours of work to convert a lesson that's in person to digital only. It takes an incredible amount of work. It's web design, right? And video making.
Hartill says another issue that has slowed the district's ability to do emergency remote learning is making sure enough students have internet access at home. Officials with the Anchorage Education Association, the teachers union, say remote learning came up during collective bargaining last year. AEA President Corey Ace says there currently isn't a system in place from the district to implement remote learning in a weather emergency.
Teachers are willing to deliver online instruction. Teachers are willing to support their students and support families on weather days. The question is what materials, what technology, what plan is in place to do that?
Like many other residents, Ace has been frustrated at the slow rate of snow plowing from the city. He says he doesn't believe the school district is the main organization standing in the way of kids getting back to school.
This is an issue of the Muni not being able to clear our streets, and not an issue of the Anchorage School District or teachers not in a position to deliver services to their students.
Tim with the district says remote learning remains an option, and it would likely look similar to how classes operated during COVID.
It shouldn't take that long to implement once the loose ends are tied up and the logistics are mapped out. So it's not like we would be starting from scratch here. We already have a baseline of operations that the district and the community is used to.
Tim wouldn't go into details about the other options the district is considering. Reporting from my snow-blocked home in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
An Anchorage judge has ruled that Alaska State Senator Laura Reinbold cannot block members of the public who she disagrees with from commenting on a social media account the lawmaker maintains in connection with her elected office. The Alaska Beacon reports the judge said in his ruling Friday that Reinbold's account is a limited public forum where she can't discriminate against someone based on their viewpoint. The judge wrote that Reinbold was in the position of a government actor when she banned a user named Bobby McDowell from her page. However, the judge was not able to fully resolve the case, saying there are still some facts in dispute over why Reinbold blocked McDowell. McDowell said Reinbold blocked her after she criticized the legislator's response to COVID-19. Reinbold maintains she blocked McDowell for engaging in religious discrimination and calling for Reinbold's resignation. Reinbold's term as a state senator ends on January 3rd. She did not run for re-election this year. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an unconventional Christmas album by Alaska artists raising money for Alaska nonprofits.
It's not about Jingle Bell Rock. It's about what people feel.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
What if accessing your personal and family immunization records was as easy as checking your phone? The Docket app is a secure option that allows Alaskans to quickly access their immunization records. Need immunization records for school or travel? Docket makes it simple and is available for download from the App Store or Google Play Store. Learn more at vaccinationrecords.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A Kenai woman died Sunday night when she was hit by a pickup truck with a snowplow in whiteout conditions, according to Alaska State Troopers. The crash happened on Kalifornsky Beach Road during a major storm that started Saturday night and intensified through the day Sunday, dropping roughly 2 feet of snow on the western Kenai by Monday morning. Troopers said they were notified just before 8:30 p.m. Sunday that the truck had hit 31-year-old Stephanie Anderson. Anderson was wearing dark clothing and walking in the road near the intersection of Pirate Lane. About 18 inches of snow were piled on the roadway, according to troopers. Troopers said after the collision, the driver of the pickup truck stopped and began rendering aid to Anderson. Anderson was declared dead at the scene. Troopers said an investigation into the incident is ongoing. A commercial building in Wasilla exploded Sunday afternoon, likely due to a natural gas leak. That's also according to Alaska State Troopers. Troopers wrote in an online statement today that one person was injured and listed in critical condition at a local hospital. The blast damaged nearby homes, and residents could feel it 10 miles away or farther, according to eyewitnesses and accounts on Facebook. A woman who identified herself on Facebook as the wife of the owner of Connoisseur Lounge, a cannabis retail shop, wrote that the injured man was a contractor checking on some new construction that was part of the business. Troopers did not name the business, but agency spokesman Austin McDaniel confirmed the building was considered a total loss.
The building that the explosion originated from was completely destroyed, and there was some significant damage to some other structures there on that same property, and then some pretty minor damage to some structures that were on some nearby properties as well.
McDaniel said investigators with the state fire marshal's office continued to investigate what caused the explosion, but evidence at the scene and interviews indicated a gas leak. The owners of Connoisseur Lounge did not immediately respond to an email or a Facebook message seeking comment. The statewide advisory board to the Alaska Marine Highway System voted December 2nd to spend more in 2024. But as Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, labor shortages could hamstring the effort to improve service after years of cost-cutting.
The nearly $160 million approved by the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board would allow all but one of the state's nine ferries to sail during the busy summer tourism season. One vessel would be kept idle to fill in during maintenance layups. The board's unanimous vote comes ahead of the anticipated release of the governor's proposed budget. That'll be a starting point for lawmakers, who will consider the state's overall spending plan when the state legislature convenes next month.
We're talking an entire calendar year away before this would even be in effect.
That's Rob Carpenter, deputy commissioner of the state's Department of Transportation. He works closely with the ferry board. The board's 2024 budget recommendation is more costly than the last 5 years. It would be about $14 million more than 2023, but have 27 less service weeks. The operations board was created by the legislature last year to make recommendations to the marine highway system. The board has talked extensively over the past several months about the need for improvements.
There are a lot of people, a lot of communities who feel that promises have been made with regard to the Alaska Marine Highway System, that they believe those promises have been broken.
The ferry system is in a very dire, dire straits right now at the moment.
That's board members Captain Keith Hillard and Juanetta Ayers in September. At the board's meeting this month, they considered four operating plans for 2024, each with a different price tag and number of ferries. Plan A would have all nine vessels running. Plan D would be a reduction in service. Plan B and C were in between. Board Chair Shirley Marcourt said she supported Plan B.
And Option B, I think, is really justifiable in terms of going to the legislature.
The state's marine highway system has been suffering from a labor shortage. In February, the state contracted with a job replacement company to help hire new people. Board member Paul Johnson questioned whether the system would have enough staff to crew the 8 vessels in Plan B. Deputy Commissioner Carpenter was optimistic.
We're still aggressively pursuing all the hiring we can. And, I think we have to budget or plan for that. We have full crew and then adjust as necessary when we get there.
The board unanimously supported Plan B for the 2024 operating plan. It's expected to have no service gaps. The recommendation will be sent as a letter to the DOT Commissioner's Office. It will also be included in the board's short-range plan. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Petersburg's Early Childhood Education Task Force is seeking Borough Assembly approval to fund a program supporting continuing education for child care workers. The program would be an adaptation of the Juno Hearts program. It's meant to help address the child care access crisis in Petersburg by reducing staff turnover. KFSK's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Petersburg is in the midst of a child care access crisis. According to a recent needs survey, 44% of caregivers don't work because of a lack of child care. The Borough Assembly appointed an early childhood education task force to help figure out how to approach the issue on a borough level. Chelsea Tremblay heads that task force. She gave an update to the Borough Assembly at its December 5th meeting.
Joining me is Katie Homeland. We just have a quick update for you.
Homeland's on the task force and runs Kinderskog, a local child care center. Tremblay said the task force has been looking into the Juno Hearts program. They recently met with Brian Holst, who heads Juno's Economic Development Council.
He shared the methodology behind the program, the positive effect it's had on staff turnover in Juno, and other lessons that they've seen trying to tackle this problem in their community.
The proposed program would be similar to Juno's. It pays child care workers between $2,000 and $5,000 a year for continuing education in the field. In a later interview with KFSK, Tremblay said sometimes continuing education is already required for maintaining certifications.
We all do better with more training, and so continuing people to stay curious and stay invested in the field is really the goal, as well as demonstrating a gratitude for the kind of work that they're doing. It's such an underpaid position.
Assembly member Donna Marsh voiced concerns about the program at the meeting. She asked what would happen after the initial funding ran out, which could be in 1 or 2 years.
It was to the tune of $40,000 a year that this would cost. When the ARPA funds run out, when these things run out, I wonder what Plan B is. And
the task force is requesting up to $40,000 in funding through the borough's ARPA grant. That's federal funding for COVID relief. Tremblay says the task force doesn't know yet where they would get funding for future years. But, she said, starting the program to see if it works would be a huge step in the process.
In order to pursue further funding, sometimes you need the program to already be going so you can have a demonstrated impact of what the program's doing.
In a later interview, Marsh said she doesn't want to add costs that she thinks Petersburg residents will ultimately shoulder.
Bottom line, whether it's grant funded or putting it as a budget item on either the borough or the hospital, it increases costs.
The presentation by Holst to the task force did address the economics of investing in early childhood education. Holst said research shows a 16% inflation-adjusted return on investment into early childhood development programs. And according to research, the earlier the investment in children, the greater return. Prenatal programs have the greatest dollar return, followed by programs for ages 0 to 3. Tremblay is not in the field of childcare herself. She says it's important to trust the experts for direction.
We have well over a century's worth professional childcare and youth programming experience on the task force.
Tremblay says that if this program is adopted, the task force could easily get immediate feedback.
So it's pretty dreamy to be able to have that kind of... We have people on the task force who themselves will qualify, who then get to make sure that their employees understand how the process works. And then if it ends up being too complicated or messy or whatever, then they can bring it back and say, hey, we need this to actually be accessible to people.
This proposal is the first ask for funds by the Early Childhood Education Task Force. If implemented, the program could start as soon as January, with first payments going out around June. In Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
And by
Annie Wright Schools, located in Tacoma, Washington, offers rich, thoughtful, and internationally recognized programs for students from around the world. A variety of boarding options are available year-round. There's a virtual preview of the school, the faculty, and campus for high school students seeking to explore international baccalaureate academics, arts, and athletics at aw.org/Alaska. This message sponsored by Annie Wright Schools.
A Metlakatla middle schooler recently learned she was accepted into a prestigious program meant to prepare her for the Ivy League. Staff at the Annette Island School District say Casey Nelson is the only student they can remember being accepted into the program. KRBD's Reagan Miller has more.
13-year-old Casey Nelson is in eighth grade at Charles Leesk Middle School. Someday, she hopes to go to Harvard. Being accepted into the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth could help. The program is for students who excel in school and score highly on a screening test. Casey says she had fun with that part of the process.
I thought the test was cool. I've never really done anything there yet.
Casey's mother, Cecilia Brendable, says her daughter took the school and college ability test as part of her application. It's a multiple-choice test full of above-grade-level questions on topics like math and logic. Brendable says Casey received her official certificate in the mail in early December.
It took like 10 days, and they replied back and offered her classes, and we get to pick.
Students who are accepted have access to a slew of classes that not only give them high school credits, but are meant to prepare them for a journey to Ivy League schools.
She is interested in like a foreign language because a lot of the Ivy League schools want 4 years of foreign language, and usually high schools in like smaller towns only provide like 2 years. So I think she was going to go for that or a science class.
A Charles Leesk Middle School counselor pushed Nelson's family to look into the program. Brendable recalls her daughter's reaction to the news that she'd been accepted.
She was pretty excited. We just got they sent us an email a couple weeks ago.
She's not quite sure whether her daughter will take advantage of the program online or in person. The family will work with Casey's school to learn more. At Charles Leesk Middle School, Casey is taking a math class meant for high schoolers. Brendable says her daughter tested with top marks recently. She might have eyes on Harvard, but for now, Casey says she's enjoying school in Metlakatla.
I like Native art. It's really fun. And I also like band.
She hasn't completely made up her mind on what she'd like to study in college yet.
I have a lot of ideas, but I probably want to study literature.
She'll have plenty of time to think it over. She's on track to graduate high school in 2027. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
For the third year in a row, a group of Alaska producers have put together a compilation of original holiday music to benefit women's shelters across the state. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more on the festive fundraiser.
When it comes to classic holiday songs, there are some that are just impossible to top.
How do you beat the stuff from like the 50s? No, you can't. You can't.
That's why producer James Glaves says the Alaska artists on this year's Bright Lights album aren't trying to rehash the classics. Each song on the compilation is instead a fresh take on holiday music.
You can write about your alcoholic uncle who burnt the tree down if you want. And it, you know, it's like, that's what I think is really great about it, is like, it's not about Jingle Bell Rock. It's about what people feel and what they think about the holidays, and the fact that there's dark songs, I think, is really cool.
Bright Lights Volume 3 is a holiday music album featuring original songs from Alaska artists, and it's also a fundraiser for domestic violence shelters in the state's rural communities. The project is in its third year. Glaves, who lives in Anchorage, mastered this year's album. And the producer has roots in Soldotna and Kisilov, where he says he grew up in a house that loved music. He started jamming when he was a student at Kay Beach Elementary School.
Got my first drum set, got my first guitar, even though I wanted a four-wheeler. I was, you know, peninsula kid. My life would have been probably much different if I would have gotten that expensive four-wheeler instead of the little red guitar under the Christmas tree.
He says from there, he became more and more obsessed with making music. Today, he's worked with artists in Alaska and beyond and put out solo and group projects of his own. He was brought onto the Bright Lights project in 2020, in its first year, by one of its founders, Nanilchik-raised musician Andy Tholberg. The group donated the proceeds from that volume to a nonprofit in Anchorage. And then the next year, they donated to a few smaller organizations, all of them shelters in remote communities like Bethel, Hooper Bay, and Kotzebue. Glaives says it was important to the group to bring attention to organizations in rural parts of the state specifically.
Most Alaskans understand that there is an unbelievable domestic violence problem in our state. But a lot of people don't know that. At the very, very least, there's a few people who are going to see this and think about it for a minute.
He says the response so far has been somewhat small. He estimates they've raised between $1,000 and $2,000 a year. People donate what they can to buy each album on the website Bandcamp. Glaives says they're hoping for a bigger response this year.
We beat the sophomore slump. It's not some pipe dream kind of like, oh, we just threw this little thing together. It's the third year. It's real now, you know.
Volume 3 features songs from Strawberry Friend in Anchorage and the Casey Smith Project in Fairbanks.
And then Andy and myself, and I'd never contributed to it, so Andy and myself, we did a track which was really weird and fun. It's track 4, The End of Year Feeling. It's really, really dark, but it's, you know, it's super fun. We had a really good time making it.
Like the other 8 tracks on the album, the song is a fresh take on holiday music. All the songs on the album are originals. Glaives says he wants to change the stigma that today's holiday songs are trash.
No. This isn't bad music.
He says there's room to be creative, even within such a well-established musical tradition. Glaives says generally artists feel freer to make creative choices since it's holiday music and not their usual stuff.
I think that gives people a hall pass to just have fun, let their hair down, do whatever they want. And I think that's why the albums are turning out so awesome.
You can find Bright Lights Volume 3 on Bandcamp. Proceeds go to the Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, the Hooper Bay Haven Shelter, Aminak Women's Shelter, Bering Sea Women's Shelter in Nome, and Maniluk Family Crisis Center in Kotzebue. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Chris Clint, Jeremy Shea, and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Angela Denning and Rachel Cassandra in Petersburg, and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Madeline Rose is our producer with help tonight from Annie Fight and Daisy Bass. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.